begin with the end, having the end in mind, know what you need, and from there, it will probably be a quite clear path how to get there. But if you don't know where you want to go, you might go in the wrong or in all directions, but still, it will take longer than having the end in mind.
Hey, smart biotech scientists, welcome back. We are in the middle of a conversation with Joel Eichmann, who is the co-founder and managing director of Green Elephant. And if you haven't listened to part one of our conversation yet, please go back. In part one, we are talking about how you can develop sustainable and scalable adherent cell culture processes. And now in part two, we are talking about the workflows, how to make them more seamless, and we are talking about the sustainability part. How can you reduce your carbon footprint? So stay tuned for an exciting conversation. Are you juggling the complexities of CMC development while trying to enjoy the beauty of biotech? Have you ever wondered if there's a way to simplify bioprocessing? Welcome to the Smart Biotech Scientist podcast, where we're diving headfirst into the very challenges you face. We're breaking it down, demystifying the jargon, and giving you the keys to unlock your full potential. I'm your host, David Brohlman, and I get it. With 15 plus years in the biotech industry, I face the same challenges you do. There's a way to simplify and streamline so you can remove complexity, you can skip trials and errors, deliver without delay your groundbreaking therapy to clinics at market, and still enjoy every single step. Do you want to learn how industry experts and I did it? Grab a cup of coffee and your favorite notebook and pen. Now is the time to take your bioprocessing game to the next level. Let's smarten up biotech. So now, can you break this down for our listeners into a few simple steps? Let's assume that one of our listeners has a new cell that he or she wants to cultivate. What would you advise that person? Like, how do you start? What systems do you choose? And what are the main steps?
I would start with the end. So what do you want? What is the product? Is it the cell itself? Is it a viral vector? Is it a vaccine? That's the first thing you need to define. Then you need to define what is the batch size? What is the economic that is behind the product you're developing? Also, what comes then is starting a quality by design process. So starting like a quality target product profile, where you define what are the specifications of the cell line or of the cell or the product you want to have in the end. And from here, you start choosing your equipment, your raw materials, the cell line. You start as early as possible doing all the characterizations and also the establishment of the assays you need in your QC. And once you have done this at an early stage, it's not that complex anymore doing the actually scaling of the batch size. I think that's key. Getting a small scale process as early as possible, choosing an equipment that might have some kind of linear scalability, getting it optimized at a small scale, and then it's not that hard to scale it up anymore. What I think key is know what you need from the very beginning of your product and process development.
Yeah, smart biotech scientists, remember that. Know what you want, have the end in mind, and then work everything backwards to develop a robust and cost-efficient manufacturing process. Now, I'm curious because cell and gene therapy space is still quite a new space, and there's a lot of innovations going on, new technologies coming out every single day. Now there is this magic buzzword of AI, and I was just wondering, is there a way using all these new technologies to accelerate process development and bring the products to market faster? Because this is still a big challenge in the entire biopharmaceutical industry, that the whole development just takes way too many years before it gets to the patient. Do you see any trends or anything on the horizon that we potentially could leverage to make these timelines shorter?
I don't see many approaches for AI in the process development itself. There might be some tools that allow you to maybe decrease the number of runs for a DOE or do less experiments, do better predictions. But I think the biggest leverage of AI in the pharmaceutical industry is in the QC, in the documentation. But for this, you need to get rid of paper first. So I think there are one or two steps to do before we can really use AI. Because as long as everything is on paper, the data are not accessible to AI. And I think data accessibility is the key to use AI. I've been working at a vaccine company before starting Green Elephant as a validation specialist. And we were a team of quite a few scientists. Most of them had a PhD. And most of the time of our work, or a lot of time of our work, we did spend on collecting available data and putting them into new risk assessments, validation plans. And this is something, when the data is available and you have such high standardization of how to write a qualification plan, that is something that could be done in 95% of the work, could be done by a generative AI. I think that's where we have a bigger leverage of AI than trying to improve process development. If we had like a new sensor technology that could monitor more molecules or get more data from the cell culture media, for example, and do analysis with AI, that's something that could be possible. But I personally do not know anyone doing this. I don't know, David, if you know someone working on this kind of technology, I think we could do some interesting stuff here.
I personally don't know either. That's why I ask you the question really out of curiosity to see what could be possible. Because yes, I think the challenge in especially these new industries is that the lack, as you mentioned, of the accessibility, lack of data, and probably also we don't generate enough data to make AI as efficient as possible. That's also my guess. Because also on the biologic side, when we do modeling, we have data, but it's difficult sometimes to apply huge AI over those data because we don't have enough to get anything meaningful out of that.
Yeah, maybe one more thing about the AI topic. The bioprocess engineering, we have quite few parameters that go in and out. And still these parameters do not have that high ranges or variables. So working with traditional statistics, trends, I think these are powerful tools. And an AI is still a black box. Difficult to validate, difficult to understand why it's giving these kind of results it's giving. So I think that's one of the reasons why classical process development, well, just using statistical tools like DOE.
I agree. And one thing also is, well, obviously, yes, we can use technology. We can make this process much faster and seamless if we have the right technology. I just want to touch upon one area once again. It's about the silos you mentioned at the beginning between R&D and process development. Besides bringing the people together, is there anything else we can do as scientists and engineers to make this as smooth as possible?
I think it becomes also with education of the R&D people, of the academics, of universities. I think people in the industry, we've all been through academia. And we know how the academic thinking is, what the incentivations in academia, having the pressure to publish, these kind of things, very different incentivations than we have in the industry, where in the end you have processes, you have timelines, you need to get a product on the market. That's a very different incentivation. So starting, maybe I could imagine there are very academic conferences about cell and gene therapies, about stem cells. Could be a good point starting here to educate how to have the process, the product, the end in mind when doing basic research or applied research.
I like that you mentioned the education, and I think that's a great way to help people recognize the challenges or also the needs that it's important to collaborate and to understand what other people from other sectors, what are they facing, what are their challenges.
Yes, and also it gives younger scientists a perspective to have different career paths as well. So when I was in university as a master's student, I didn't know much about the biotech industry. So I think it makes sense just to get in touch with academia at an early stage, educate about how the industry works, how we are incentivized to do things, and what are our biggest problems, because people like solving problems, but they need to be aware of problems.
Now, speaking of problems, our discussion wouldn't be complete if we didn't touch upon the sustainability part. And I know you are big on sustainability. You put it even on, I'd say, on your flag. It's even in your name. It's Green Elephant. So let's talk about that for a second, because I know throughout my career, single-use technology has always been a big topic, and I see a lot of advantages, obviously. But one thing that isn't solved yet is the whole waste part of that. So now we know that the global healthcare sector contributes to about 4.4% of the global carbon emissions. So now I'm curious, how can we reduce our carbon footprint without compromising on quality and the functionality, finally, of our therapies?
I think, again, a holistic approach is needed here, because also sustainability is more than carbon reduction. It's about water usage. It's about waste management. It's about biodiversity. So these are all things that need to be taken into account talking about sustainability. But let's stick with the carbon footprint. I think single-use technology has also some advantages here. So, for example, it allows you to work in fully closed systems. And if that is possible, you can go to a not so strict clean room environment, and you will save orders of magnitude in power consumption if you can go from A and B clean room to a C or D clean room. So that already has a massive effect on the energy consumption. And looking at the energy mix we have in Germany and Europe, anywhere, still a lot of the energy we're consuming is coming from coal, from gas. So that's the first part. But still, there's a lot we can do. So what we do at Green Elephant is two things. One approach is using biopolymers instead of polystyrene or polypropylene, so polymers that are made from crude oil. Because in the end, the waste from our industry is going to a plant where it's burned. But the carbon footprint of biopolymers is way lower than of fossil or crude oil-based polymers. And then we have a second approach, and that might make sense to explain one product we have here. So I've been talking about an idea I had at a water playground when I saw an Archimedean screw. The product we developed from this idea is, we call it cell screw. It's a cell flask for adherent cell expansion. It's technically the combination of a roller bottle and a stack system. And it has two internal structures. So it's a bottle that is rotating like a roller bottle. And the one structure is an Archimedean screw. So by rotation, the media is transferred through the compartments of the bottle. In the middle, there's a tube. It can flow back. So we have a constant mixing of the cell culture media. And the second structure are concentric cylinders that are making up a very huge growth area. And this structure allows us to reduce the footprint of the vessel compared to the stacked systems. So it's much smaller in terms of facility footprint, in terms of media that needs to go in, media volume, but also in terms of the amount of material we need to make the same growth area. So compared to the stacked system, we need only about 20% of the raw material making the same growth area. And in combination with using biopolymers, the carbon footprint is about 90% reduced. That's one of the ways where like a technical benefits and a sustainability benefit go hand in hand. And I think that's how we need to think product development, but also process development, because there are more examples where a technical benefit also leads to a sustainability benefit and also to a economical benefit.
So what I'm hearing, Joel, it's all about having a smart approach, being holistic, have a holistic view, knowing what you're doing and looking at the overall picture. And by making some smart choices, you will be able to find solutions to reduce your carbon footprint, but at the same time also to make your process more cost efficient and likely also more robust. That's what I'm hearing.
Definitely, yes.
Great. Before we wrap up, Yoel, one more question out of curiosity, because you're a scientist, you're an engineer, and now you've become a CEO. How is that transition for you now working on actually in business development?
Yeah, well, I'm still wearing many hats. I'm still a scientist, still an engineer, still very involved in product development. I find it very exciting. I think it's the best thing I could do in my personal career, just because I learned that working in a big organization, in a corporate, is just not the right environment for me. I need fast change. I need just to make things happen quickly. I just get a bit heavily when I have to wait 2 or 3 or 4 or 6 weeks for a decision. So that's why working at a startup, leading a startup, is a very good experience and just the right place to be for me at the moment.
Wow, fantastic. We have covered a lot of ground today, Yoel. So what is now the most important takeaway from our conversation?
Begin with the end. Having the end in mind, know what you need. And from there, it will probably be a quite clear path how to get there. But if you don't know where you want to go, you might go in the wrong or in all directions, but still it will take longer than having the end in mind.
Yoel, where can people connect with you?
I think LinkedIn is always a good thing. Also contacting me via the website, email. I think you can put my email address in the show notes. I think that's the easiest way.
Do reach out to Yoel. I will leave all the information down in the show notes. And thank you so much for being on the show today, Yoel.
Yeah, David, thanks for the invitation. It was a pleasure to be with you. Thank you.
All right, smart scientists. That's all for today on the Smart Biotech Scientist podcast. Thank you for tuning in and joining us on your journey to bioprocess mastery. If you enjoyed this episode, please leave a review on Apple Podcasts or your favorite podcast platform. By doing so, we can empower more scientists like you. For additional bioprocessing tips, visit us at smartbiotechscientist.com. Stay tuned for more inspiring biotech insights in our next episode. Until then, let's continue to smarten up biotech.